So this should be a seamless baton. How come you got into your...
Do we wait till people come in?
There's going to be a little bit of flux. Like there's going to be a little bit of disturbance. And then when the dust settles, then we're allowed to carry on with the conversation.
Okay.
And then that gong you heard earlier on, that's when I can... I leave.
Okay. Yeah. So... Should I introduce myself?
David Toop, could you introduce yourself, please, to the audience? Over.
My name's David Toop, and I'm a composer, musician. I write about sound and listening and music. And I curate exhibitions of sound work. So that's me
that's
in
who
a
you
nutshell.
Are.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're also a bowler.
A ten-pin bowler or a cricket bowler?
What have you been doing, David, all bloody day? You've been bowling?
Yes, I've been bowling, That's it. Sorry, I'm a strange... I feel calm and yet hysterical.
What, upstairs or downstairs? How come you got changed? What's all that about? You don't want to be one of us. You want to be one of them. Is that what it's about?
I wanted to get into civilian clothes because I felt this was a kind of different experience. And also I felt that the, no offence to Jem, but the shirt was just
You look back, did you went for the blue one though, didn't you?
It's too big.
I'll tell you, they make you sweat.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of sitting inside a plastic bag.
And they have the fabric is,
it
has a silver
purpose.
Glitter.
You should know.
The fabric has a silver glitter, which is quite disturbing.
All right.
It looks expensive yet cheap.
Yeah, very cheap. Yeah. And that's how I feel when I'm wearing it as well. And people keep going like that when you go past.
Yeah.
You know?
But I also found I was developing RSI, in this muscle under here, from holding a stopwatch.
Yeah. I get it more with the stick.
Yes.
Yeah, the sticks are...
But I think you're right. It would be interesting, because we're the only people who are doing both.
Well,
it would be interesting...
but you're not. Could you get changed if I go and get the suit?
We're in a different place.
Yes.
And I think they really are different places. Uh-huh. I mean, the atmosphere of them, it's very interesting to compare what happens... in your perception of what is going on when you're working upstairs compared to this situation. I mean, this situation is quite familiar to me.
Have you got your own chat show?
Not quite.
Is it cable? Is it something I'm missing?
Yeah, it's
I've left
one of those
years
kind
ago,
of
so I have no
global,
idea what you're talking about.
You know, everybody's talking about globalization, so it has a micro audience.
Right.
Okay.
So you do it in your living room.
That's right.
With a few friends come around and go,
no,
I'm David Toop, and...
Nobody comes.
Right, nobody comes to it at all.
You were saying that things get bigger and they also get smaller,
so you
can do
they
things...
ebb and flow.
Yeah, you can do things on a vast scale, like social networking, so you're millions of people, and then you can do them... So nobody knows or cares what you're doing.
Right.
They're both sort of equally valid. But what I was going to say was, one of the interesting things I found about this business of... I don't know if everybody knows how this thing is working, but you're
upstairs.
Following us... Yeah, upstairs.
Not this conversation. You're not about
to
talk about the conversation.
The stopwatch thing.
Yeah, that is very strange.
15-second segments. And what I found, particularly in the session before last, when my concentration was drifting, was that time was becoming very elastic. Mm. And so one 15-second section was incredibly slow, so you had all the time in the world to do what you wanted, and the next 15-second section was over in a flash, and you're behind, and you're thinking, oh, my God. Yeah. And
look at the two of us. The idea is that one of us is conducting, so literally one of us is a finger, and it's a timeline.
Mm.
I don't think we're allowed to talk to them. I think we're meant to be. As you know, David.
It's silly not to acknowledge.
But when you're actually, you have the stopwatch, you're on a very different headspace. And that's when I find that time is taking a long time to kind of move along incrementally. And it looks like rocket science, and again, it's not. But when you're performing, and there's something that, you know, that, to use that word again, haptic, you get lost in the vibrations. And when you find that you're making this sound and you can hear it coming out amongst the cacophony, You know, you could have been playing 10, 15 minutes, I don't know. And it's that sense, that meditative, contemplative space that I keep going to, which then you say, no, stop, you've got to hit the mark. You need to stop doing this because you've got to go back, peg out, and start all over again. Yes. I find that incredibly exhilarating, but also slightly anal. And it feels very schizophrenic. Are you getting that?
Yeah, and it's not just because the situation makes you feel...
Anal,
schizophrenic, all these words. It's not the way I'm used to working. As a musician, I'm an improviser. So I suffered a lot of anxiety about doing this thing because I'm not good with numbers, timings, any of that kind of process.
He's useless.
Can't do it. Shit. Well, in fact, the first session, I did double time.
Right. As a punishment.
And Jem was on the next table and he said,
for David, what are you doing?
He said, you're a minute out. Yes. And I thought, how does he know?
He's memorized the score.
He's memorized the whole
2010.
Thing.
2010.
It was frightening.
Yeah. I don't like him when he's playing either. I'm going, what's he doing?
That's right. Because he knows what's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But normally I wouldn't measure things that precisely. It's a different way of working.
Computer as well. A lot of your sounds are coming through computers. You're not Chris Watson with the microphone inside the carcass waiting for the hyenas to come and eat.
I've never actually done that, but I have done something like that. But, I grew up playing guitar and conventional instruments, and now I do a lot of things on computer. So I'm sort of old school, but working in
new school.
New school, that's right.
Cottage,
old new school, that's right.
All right.
But I'm interested to know, have you done anything like this before?
I've done lots of performing, and I've sworn in public before. You mean the conversation or the playing?
The playing.
Yes. I used to be in a performance group called Being Carnal, and the idea was to be as carnal as possible. And I guess in a way we took the lead from Test Department.
Okay.
So the idea of knocking the shit out of bits of furniture and metal and so on was always very, very close to my heart. And then we were playing with Casios as well. But nothing is as beautiful as this. You know the noises I used to make were really truly awful. And there's something sublime and wonderful and quite beautiful about what I'm part of upstairs.
Is that a polarity? Awful and beautiful.
Both, definitely both.
Mm.
Yes. But in the rehearsal, I mean, the thing about did you rehearse in the electronic workshop as well up near Trinity Boy Wall?
I just rehearsed briefly once.
Right, because I was up there. I don't know, earlier this week and. Two or three of you, you can't even begin to imagine the kind of noise that we're generating out there compared to what we were doing in little fragments. And it I went home a little bit anxious thinking, well, is this going to work? You know, is this going to transpose? Mm. Is this going to fill up the roundhouse? And I just keep feeling that when I'm out there and listening to it, I could get lost in it. Is that meditative sonic space that you can go to, which is truly exhilarating.
Mm. Well, it's good that you think that.
Yeah.
Have
and
you
some
ever
of your music's a bit like that as well.
Well, it's very nice of you to say so. Yeah. But have you ever done anything with that kind of duration?
No. I swim a lot.
Well,
I've run two marathons.
Yeah, it relates.
That's a long way.
I think it's
doing the same thing for a while.
Yeah, joking aside, it relates.
Yeah.
Because you get into that state of mind with something like swimming.
Yeah.
Or running, not that I run, but swimming, you can get into that state of mind, and it connects to the way you can approach these kind of things and what you get out of them.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that people think it's unusual to have a piece of music that lasts even the length of time that we're playing today, from whenever it was 8:30 in the morning till 1 o'clock. But there are many activities that we do which have these kind of durations.
Right.
So it's a question of what we have become accustomed to tolerating, isn't it, as listeners. And that's very driven by technology, that music has become subdivided into these different listening sessions which are comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in actual fact, you can play and you can listen for very long durations, and you just get into another state in the ways that you do when you swim for long distances. You know, you go into this kind of trance state.
It's a trance state, absolutely.
And,
but I think that's, you know, when I was saying earlier on about the stopwatch and having to conduct at the same time, there is a strange schizophrenia, because you can't truly lose yourself, because you're having to permanently be aware of the fact that you need to kind of hit your mark. And this thing about improvising, you know, there was a bit of me that wanted to just improvise. I thought it would be great to improvise long player for a while, but we can't.
But just
and Jem is very specific about.
Yeah. You see, I think this idea of losing yourself is, to some extent, a fallacy. Because if you go and hear people improvise, quite often they play for about 45 minutes.
Mm.
So they're not lost in the music. They're quite well in control, you know, of what's going on. I think it's just different ways of engaging with the material and the activity. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about strict control here or becoming completely lost and crazy over here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people have that misconception about improvising, that it's kind of wild and free and
uncontrolled.
And in fact, it's very concentrated listening very often. And you have one thing I would like to talk about is why sound is the focal point for this whole event or this whole project of GEMS.
As opposed to
writing, or as opposed to making films, or a science project, or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, have you had any thoughts on that?
Because it is sound, I didn't want to arrive here with pictures or paintbrushes. So I thought, if Jem's telling me to play that, I'm going to play that. I'm not going to say no to the man. I'd considered bringing a cake, but I knew that wouldn't work either. And I'd considered that maybe we should just down tools and run round the roundhouse. But I knew that would really stick in his craw. So I'm doing it because the guy told me to. And that's, I didn't question it. Sound, no sound, you know, sounds good, whatever. I'm gonna do it. So,
so you're
what about
a person
you?
Who
you
kind
thinking?
Of
I don't want to do
obeys.
This. Yeah, if he tells me to do it, I'll do it. Yeah, absolutely.
I felt very anxious, to be honest, about this whole thing.
Right.
Because I find the bowls very difficult to activate.
Right.
It's not my favourite instrument.
Right. So what would your favourite instrument be?
What, to play this on?
Yeah.
Almost anything else.
Right. So you've considered arriving with maybe, an acoustic guitar and just strum your way through the piece?
Yeah, or a couple of stones or anything.
Right, anything. A bit of sandpaper.
Anything. Yeah.
Project
yes.
Start, here we go. I'm going anything. To come up with me. I'm not touching those bowls again.
Yeah.
They are quite difficult to play, surprisingly.
They're very difficult to play. Yeah. And the other thing is something I mentioned before, that, you know, my discomfort with this kind of timing, you know, this kind of precision and repetitive stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that sense, I did feel rather anxious about it. But, you know, I was part of the think tank that Jem put together to develop
this. Oh, so you
made
him do it?
I made him
do it. You made him do it? Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So it wasn't your idea, but when he had the idea, you said, right, now let's see you do it. And he's had to do it because of you.
Yes, that's right.
Jesus Christ to Moses. I didn't know that, David. Is it on the flowchart? I know I've got this, and somewhere on the flowchart, I noticed your name did come up.
I haven't seen it.
But it doesn't say he made me do it anyway. Do it myself, I've just read.
Yes.
He wrote down, do it
there
my
was
fucking
a point.
Self. If nobody else can do it,
do it yourself.
I'm going to do it myself. But he's not, is he? He's got us, Muggins here
he's
to do it.
He's got us, yes.
Yeah. So I know what we'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get him up here, go like that for... Have you done an hour of that? Your arm goes numb. I had an erection, though, when I did the... I think it was table 4. You know, there's a lot to do.
And table 4 is difficult.
Yeah, but it's also incredibly sexy. When you get... I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes into it, and you hit that beautiful... I had an erection, and I had to say to beautiful, the woman with the big... and I said, look, can you see it in this suit? And she said, no, you're fine. So I carried on. But no, it was a really sexy bit. Table four. Are you on later?
Table four, table I've four already done.
Good. Table four is good.
But there's a gong that doesn't work on table four.
Is that?
Yeah, I think right. It's table four. And so you have a silent thing, which is...
Right, but you stir it and nothing's happening.
You stir it and nothing's happening.
No, it's your technique, mate. You got that wrong. You've got to push a little bit harder, and you need to be actually vertical against the lip of the bowl.
I've discussed it with a few people, and they've all had the same experience.
Are they all having problems as well?
Yeah. Right. So...
Hayley and I will work on that.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll sort that one out.
Good.
Where were we?
Sound.
Were we there or somewhere in between?
We were talking about sound and why it was significant. And also the think tank. Because they came up, Jem had this idea that he would do all this stuff on computers because, you know, he can study computer science.
If anybody can play a computer.
Yeah, well, he studied computer science virtually before computers existed.
Yeah.
But it was very clear that the technology itself wouldn't last. And I said, had you thought about like mechanical instruments, you know, like Javanese music or something like that, as another example? Something where we know something will last for hundreds or thousands of years.
Because these bowls are pretty resilient. And I remember him telling me once that, you know, whatever, it's going to survive. Post-apocalyptic, and they will survive.
So that
theoretically, in 1,000 years' time, somebody might pick up the instrument and carry it. They think, what am I going to do with that? But once they work out, you have to stroke it.
Yes.
Well, horizontally. No, vertically. No,
yes.
I can't remember.
Yeah, it could be part of an evolutionary process. You could imagine that it will go back to a certain stage of evolution and then millions of years, and then you would get to the point where something would sort of find this thing and learn how it works, which is, and then the whole ghastly cycle will begin all over again.
And he might go, David, you know, we need you around us again. No.
When I said ghastly cycle, I meant the human race
rather
than long player.
All the way around, long player. Yeah. No, I imagine that you were with long player again in 1,009 years' time.
No, I was thinking millions of years.
Oh, you're going millions?
In which case, I don't think
I'll
be around. Maybe
no, you're going to be well gone by now.
I'm older than you.
You are, yes. So. But this think tank, tell me a bit more about the thing. How did that come about? Did he didn't have enough ideas of his own? How do these things work?
Jem's got plenty of ideas. He just didn't know how to do it. So he thought, who can I put together who might have some idea? Sort of, yeah.
And you were one of the...
We swam around, gasping at the surface.
Right.
And he had an architect. He had a garden designer. Well, you laugh, but...
No, I haven't finished laughing yet. Flower arranger.
Yes, yeah. No, the thing about cut flowers is that, you know, they're over very
good
quickly.
Good bedfellows for the
so
old singing bowl.
Not
yes.
a good template
yes.
for something that's going to last 1,000 years. Whereas a garden, on the other hand, I mean, I'm
forever.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm very interested in gardening.
Was it Being there, that beautiful American film?
Peter Sellers' film.
Yeah, was it called Being There? That
was yeah, it
a,
was.
He was a gardener.
He was.
And he was a man full of wisdom, wasn't he?
Well, it depends which way you... understood the film. He was either completely stupid or very wise.
Yes.
Or maybe both. Maybe
yeah,
they're the same
I think
thing.
Was, yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. But for example, at home, I've got a Japanese garden, which I've designed myself, and I like Japanese gardens. And you can go to somewhere like Kyoto and you can see gardens that are hundreds of years old and fundamentally unchanged.
Right.
And, you know, that in itself is a fantastic model. I think.
And bonsais, they're Japanese, aren't they? Can we agree on that? Are they Chinese? Because at the moment I have an exhibition running and I've created a forest of bonsais.
Most trees. Things are like that originally Chinese.
But then they all migrated to Japan. We can now
I don't know about migrated. People went there.
Okay, they took the boat. They took the boat to Japan.
The gardens didn't.
And But there's something incredibly fascist.
Little trees going across the sea of Japan.
Yes, they don't go there on their own.
I don't like bonsai. What do you like about it?
Well, I wanted this. It's an installation, and I couldn't bring the Pyrenean forest to this gallery. So I thought, oh, I got it. I didn't need a think tank. I did it all on my own. I'll buy some bonsais. And so there's a table. Do you think it would have been better? There's a table.
I don't know.
And there's a forest of bonsais, and they're all very small. And they look as if they're in excruciating pain. I find them binding feet. Have you ever bound anybody's feet? It's the same thing. If you leave them for a week, you say, no, you can't, then things get really awkward.
Yeah.
I risk my case.
I have seen, in China, I've seen lines of bonsai trees in a park. And they're arranged so that the sun hits them and they make incredibly frightening shadows.
That's
on the ground.
I'm using the bonsais as well.
Is it?
For the shadows.
Yeah,
the shadows I've created. The forest isn't as big, the shadow forest isn't as big as the Pyrenees, but it's big and it's a bit spooky.
Little guys, but frightening projections.
So do you have any of your gardens? Any
no, bonsais? I don't. Like
are
I said, I don't like, they're not forbidden, but I'm not very keen on that. In a sense, it relates to foot binding.
Mm.
You're being
a bit aggressive, really, with the root structure by containing them in a very, very small pot. Is that what you were going to say?
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You. Well, the thing about Japanese gardening is that it is an image of nature, but it's severely constrained to produce a very controlled image of nature.
Yeah. Reduced.
And bonsai is, I suppose, the extreme example of that, where, you know, things are, well, probably for small spaces.
Like Japan. Well, Tokyo.
Places people live in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The balcony.
The balcony.
The balcony.
The balcony, yes.
You'd need them small.
Yes, well, people in Tokyo tend to live in really tiny places.
And have you been, I guess, to Japan quite a lot?
A fair amount, yes.
To improvise, is that...
To improvise.
Is that what you do when you get there?
Specifically to improvise.
I'm going to go to Japan and improvise.
It's
for 45
funny,
minutes.
It's funny you say that, because we all improvise, don't we?
I've got no script.
Exactly.
I'm making all this up as I go along.
Exactly. We have no script when we get up in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose there are people in life who have a script from beginning to end, but I don't know any.
Yeah.
So we do improvise within guidelines, and some of us have stronger guidelines than others. Mm-hmm. You know, some people have no guidelines, so their lives are very
haphazard,
chaotic,
yeah,
or inspirational, but possibly not one you would want to live. And then other people have very strict guidelines with as little improvisation as possible.
Mm.
But yes, coming back to your question, well, I've been to Japan to do different things, to talk or to play or to make works, you know, sound-related works, or just to travel.
But I asked that because Jen was mentioning the other day that this might actually transpose itself to Tasmania, of all places. I think Long Player is going to be happening at some point next year in Tasmania.
I have been to Tasmania, and there's an interesting thing
Tasmania. And
about
you mentioned
Tasmania.
Japan. I thought, no, you have Japan. I'm going to go to Tasmania. I'm going to keep going south.
If we're talking about time here and durations and so
distance,
on, the thing I've experienced about Hobart was it was a bit like being in Devon in the 1950s. So you have a kind of...
Is that the capital of Tasmania?
Yes.
Right.
It's
geographically, I was lost briefly.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. It really is a bit. They have like old-fashioned sweet shops with boiled sweets, and it's nice. I mean, it's nice. But
why are they going to embrace? Why are they taking Long Player? You
know? I've no idea.
So I also put it in. What we need to.
Tasmania is odd. I mean, there's.
Well, judging by the sweet shops,
there's a kind of black metal scene in Tasmania.
Black metal,
For example, and
is that like death metal except darker?
Darker, yes. It's
right.
As dark as you can get with your metal.
It's just like
not,
for a lot longer than that.
Not that defined.
Right.
Not.
So it's
It's
greyer.
I suppose so. But
right.
I suppose extremes, you know, that if you have these very sedate environments, then you will get certain people who have to. I mean, I'm sure that is maybe what you and I have done at certain parts in our life.
I've moved to St. Leonard's on Sea, which is very close to Bexhill on Sea.
Right.
And they're very sedate down there, very old. But Ian Sinclair, he has this theory. He's decided that it's reverse evolution. And the reason that all the old people's homes on the coast is because we're trying to become amphibian again and make our way back into the oceans and then pop up a million years ago and start all over again. And I said, Ian, you're mad. You're mad. And apparently he wags strange.
Yeah, it's...
Your go, David.
I was pausing to think.
But no, I do like the idea of reverse evolution. I do like the idea of old people moving out to the edgelands, to the coastlands. And there's something about being there, apart from the sea, which I like to swim in, is the fact that you're looking at this blank canvas every day. And it's a good bit of respite for the eyes compared to the kind of the visual cacophony that you're confronted with in Deptford, for sure.
Well, also, you get this sense of a different duration, don't you? And you, I mean, I find I can slow down much more easily if the sea is there.
In a deck chair?
It doesn't have to be a deck chair.
On the pebbles?
Any format of reclining.
Lilo?
Yes. Lilo?
Any mode.
Rubber ring?
Any mode of relaxation.
Right.
Yes.
Zimmer? No, what are they called? The ones with the wheels? The, not a wheelchair, where you can drive. Apparently you get the mobility allowance for those.
Mobility scooters.
A mobility scooter.
Of which there are more and more.
Ubiquitous down in...
More and more now. And it makes you wonder how we will have to change our environment if there's going to be a tipping point with mobility scooters where any other form of... what's the word?
Transport.
No, I wasn't thinking of transport. I was thinking of any...
Surface.
No, not surface.
Rabbits. You said surface.
Moving about.
Right. Transport, can't we...
No,
that's
narrow.
Voyaging. Moving.
Locomotion.
No. Locomotion.
Locomotion will do, yes.
Yeah, locomotion, but it's long. Too many syllables.
No, it's all right.
Right.
It was a good record in its time.
I think the world's going to be full up with too many mobility scooters. Is that the climax of where
there,
you're going?
That, like that now.
Right.
Yeah. Because you have to change everything, don't you? Well, that's fine. But I just wonder whether being a pedestrian will suddenly become...
obsolete.
Obsolete, yeah.
What's the point? I can have a scooter.
Well,
yeah, I mean, Wally,
there will come a time...
Wally? The second half of Wally, they go to... and
Yes.
They've all got those mobility scooters, except they've got no wheels on them either.
Yes.
It's just hot air underneath them, keeps them
So it's
alive.
A hovercraft.
Yeah.
Yes.
But without the rubber.
Yeah.
Because, and without the noise. But the noise of those things was just unbelievable.
Well, that's another whole subject, which maybe we shouldn't get into. But it's... I mean, that in itself is interesting, yes. The noise.
The noise of the hovercraft. I sampled that once.
The noise of... I mean, this is actually relevant to talking about time also. Because I work at home and because I work with sound, I get very, very conscious of the noise that's going around me. And where I live, it's pretty quiet, you know, for living in London. But most of the noise comes from labour-saving devices, which, to my mind, are kind of useless. You know, okay, if you're cutting the grass in a park, then fine, use a motor mower. But if you're cutting the grass, my garden is about the size of this stage area.
Hurry up.
So...
We haven't done hoovers yet. I was waiting to do, you know, all those other implements.
No, I'm thinking like hedge cutters.
I'm waiting for you to come indoors.
No, there's a hedge, lot of hedge cutters, hedge for example. Cutters. Why do you need those? It's because, you know, it's quicker. But why does it need to be quicker? I don't understand.
And are you sampling these noises and then taking them into your...
No.
Right.
No.
Because that reminded me of somebody like called Kopek that used to make... He was Russian, and I think he lived in Moscow, and I heard him on John Peel once. And he used to drop microphones out of his bedroom window, his flat. He never left the apartment, and he'd record them onto old quarter-inch tape, and that's how he made his music.
Yeah.
Kopek, including the pizza delivery, and he lived in there, and he died in there, apparently. And I remember hearing these tapes.
That will happen.
And I was thinking, David Toop, 2009, indoors, never going out, recording hedge cutters, hoovers, cement mixers, the lawnmower. You'll go.
You've got the wrong idea about me. but no, I've done a certain amount of that, yes.
Right.
But, you know, all these... The thing is, people are not conscious that they make noise, I think, generally speaking. So it's an irrelevancy. But, you know, it just makes things easier. It speeds life up. But to me, I'm very, very conscious, and it's a pain in the ass, really.
Consciousness?
No. Well, consciousness can be sometimes. Which
bloody
is
difficult.
Which is why...
It gets in the way sometimes.
We
I
do
like
things
sleeping.
To...
Lisa says she sleeps fast, but I actually prefer to sleep slow, to really savour it.
Well, you can be conscious of whether you're sleeping fast or slow, I think.
Okay, well, there's like a dial you can control.
No, I think you can have a sense of it, don't you?
No.
No?
No.
Maybe it comes later in life.
But maybe, yes.
Yeah, you're aware of how quickly you're sleeping.
Yeah, yeah. But I wouldn't want to be speeding it up. I do enjoy the process of sleep.
Sleep is a great thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to be interfering with that.
It's very necessary. Yes. No, it's very, very important.
It's strange now because I'm getting an erection.
Again?
Because the gong's rung, and it's just that weird five-minute bit where you're trying to concentrate, but you can't. And all I'm thinking about is table four. And I'm due on, I think, in about half an hour's time. And that's where the erections come from.
Table four.
But carry on talking, David, and I'll just concentrate on table four.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm interested in your erotic engagement with... I mean, it's part of what sound is all about, isn't it?
Mm.
It's a kind of erotic engagement. You mentioned the word haptic.
Yes.
Which leads you inevitably to eroticism, I think.
Do you think that's what it is? It's the haptic nature of what I'm doing that's leading to the erotic... So I think it's the bowls. It's stroking the bowls. But and when you get it right, and you know you can feel them oozing kind of keenness, that's the bit that is doing it for me.
Somebody this morning said to somebody else, "Oh, we're bowl chums."
Oh dear, oh dear.
And I thought about that for a long time.
Come and stroke me.
Nobody needed to say anything else. Just bowl chums, and it sets the mind...
Free
yes. To imagine any number of practices and interesting diversions.
But I do recommend to anybody that hasn't had a fiddle with a singing bowl is to go and buy one and get a stick.
You can't fiddle with them.
No.
Can you?
You struggle.
I mean, that's what you find doing this. That it's not something you fiddle with.
No.
It's actually extremely...
It's a deep scientific art.
Well, it kind of is, but just the craftsmanship, shall we say, of trying to get it right, you know, as far as we can, since we're sort of trying to do the right thing and be on display, is...
It's not easy.
Not easy.
Yeah.
Great.
No, I think I have to leave here.
You do.
And...